work? At school? Have you heard anything that I should know about?
Like what?
Oh, I don't know. Rumors, gossip, theories about who killed him, problems at work, at home, with his wife? That stuff about the IRS?
Not really.
Okay. Well, listen. The other reason I'm here is because I got a call from Detective Pittsfield. Do you remember her?
Yes.
She told me they have a new witness. Someone who came forward after seeing Clay Cooper's photograph on the news.
Okay.
This witness was at the Marriott Hotel. It's about 15 miles down the interstate.
I know where it is.
Well, the witness said he saw Mr. Cooper at the hotel the night he was killed. Friday night, around 9 o'clock. Do you know anything about that?
No. Why would I?
Well, because this witness also saw someone else you know. Your friend, Keller Joel. I don't suppose you know anything about that either.
No.
Charlie, I can tell you're nervous. You know, your mother told me you get nervous when you keep things from her. Or maybe tell her something that isn't completely true. She said you do things like what you're doing right now, tapping your fingers together. Charlie, can you look at me?
When did you talk to my mom?
We spoke on the phone earlier. That's how I knew where to find you. She's very concerned about this witness and Keller being at the Marriott Hotel at the same time as Clay Cooper the night he was murdered. She said that hotel is the place people from Sawyer go to have dates with people who aren't their wives or husbands. Or maybe with an employee? Sound familiar? Look, Charlie, I'm your attorney. And that means that anything you tell me is confidential. I can't share it with anyone, not even your mother or the police. Not even if you did something really bad. Not even then, Charlie. Understand? Do you want to tell me something? Anything at all? Because maybe I can help you if you tell me about Friday night.
I'm good.
Okay. How about this? We haven't really had a chance to get to know each other, right? What if you ask me a few things first? Go ahead, ask me anything you want. Did you know I used to live near here, over in Bradford? Our high school played football against yours. I used to go to all the games. Okay, I'll admit it. I dated the quarterback, so it was kind of a big deal. Is it still like that?
I guess.
I imagine it is. And I actually remember the name, Clay Cooper. It felt familiar right away. I remember his father owned the tobacco store. That was it back then, just the one store. Looks like Clay built a small empire here. That must be difficult sometimes, working for a man with that much power.
I don't know.
Oh, I remember hearing about your mother, about you. It was a big scandal back then. I didn't tell her I knew, so don't worry. I'm sure she doesn't want to be reminded of those years. Even though now, I mean, look how wonderful you turned out. Heading to college, so smart, and she's married to Dusty Madison and has two sons. Everything worked out just fine. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are jealous.
Like who?
Oh, I don't know. Just people who grew up with her. Listen, I know you don't trust anyone, Charlie. I also know what it must be like for you here. So close to getting out. I was just like you, you know. Bradford and Sawyer are very similar. Too far from the city to have much to offer. People just getting by. And all you want is to keep your head down and get the hell out of here. Get to college and start a new life and see what the world holds for you. I remember that feeling, Charlie. I remember when I got into college and went, even though I couldn't afford it. And then working two jobs all summer to make ends meet when the other kids were getting internships that paid nothing but looked great on their resumes. And then law school and more debt and more work, but I didn't stop. I did what you've been doing. I looked straight ahead and never back or to either side because I knew how fragile it was, this path I was on. I knew that one wrong move and my future would come crumbling down like a house of cards. And that's where you are right now, Charlie, trying to move forward. But this town, this murder, is about to pull you off that road, and you're afraid you might never make it back. And so am I, Charlie. Why do you think I stayed on your case and I drove all the way up from the city to see you?
Did you know Mr. Nelson, the English teacher?
Who?
The English teacher at Sawyer High School.
No. I mean, how would I know him?
You said you heard about my mom.
Oh. My God, is that the teacher who... Is that your father?
I don't know. You said I could ask you anything, so I'm asking.
I didn't remember his name, but I knew about him. Yeah, everyone did. The teacher who had to leave because he got his student pregnant. I'm so sorry, Charlie. Did your mother not tell you?
She said it was a kid from her class. A football player, like your boyfriend.
Well, I would have believed that, too. Football is everything around here. It's the ticket out for a lot of guys. And a lot of girls want to tag along. I am so, so sorry that your mother lied to you, Charlie. That must be very hard.
It's a new rule.
A new rule?
It doesn't matter. It's just for me.
Okay. So, now it's your turn. Tell me how I can help you, or Keller, or any of your friends. Let me help, Charlie. Let me help you get out of here.
What happens if I tell you, and then you tell someone else? What happens to you?
Well, I could lose my license to practice law. It's an ethical violation that I'm bound to uphold, even if I don't want to. Even if I disagree with how you want to handle things. But you already know that, don't you? I bet you've already looked it up.
The FBI was watching Coop. They say he was in business with a criminal from Pittsburgh. They want me to call him Barry, so they don't have to tell me his real name. They say now that criminal is watching me because he thinks I have the things that were missing from the safe and Coop's second cell phone, which had numbers on it, and the numbers lead to something he wants. That's all I can tell you.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot. That's alarming. Okay, so this is more serious than I thought. This is a little over my head, Charlie, if I'm being honest with you. I don't handle criminal cases. A few speeding tickets and DUIs, but this? The FBI? What kind of criminal activity was Coop involved in?
Money laundering.
Money laundering? What for? I mean, Charlie, that's serious. Do they know where the money comes from? Is it drugs? Gambling?
It sounded like it was drugs and some other stuff. I was preoccupied when he was telling me, because he told me something else I cared about more. So can you help me or not?
I can try. Let me think for a second. I'd have to do some research. I can ask the other lawyers at my firm. Oh, wait. I know someone at the DA's office, someone from law school. I can reach out to him. I think we need to find out if the FBI has jurisdiction over the local police and if we can... I don't know, I'm thinking out loud here, but maybe we use this. Get the local police to drop their investigation. We'd have to make a deal with the feds, maybe offer up anything you know in exchange for immunity. Do you know anything we can trade? Anything at all? You said they thought you might have this cell phone and some things from the safe. Do you, Charlie? Did you take things from the store that night after you heard what you heard and moved away from under the counter? Can you tell me that much?
I don't know. I have to think about it.
Okay. Okay. Charlie, wow. This is serious. If you have something that would help them put this Barry person away and you got immunity, then I suppose you would be safe. Maybe they could protect you until then. I have to think about this. But in the meantime, don't trust anyone, especially not the police. Not in this town.
But I have a friend who's a cop.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how quickly friends can turn on you, Charlie. I'm serious about this. Don't trust anyone. Not until I know what to do. I'll call you soon, okay? And if you decide you're ready to tell me more, you call me. Okay?
Okay.
You have my number?
Yes.
Good. Good. Okay. Well, you'd better get to work before anyone notices us talking. We may need to be even more careful now. Goodbye, Charlie. Take care of yourself until we speak again.
Okay. Bye. Chapter 22. I don't feel right in my head. I don't feel right in my body. It's lunch hour on Monday, and I should be in AP Physics, then English, then Math, then History, and then, only then, would I make my way to the Triple S. Then I would open the heavy back door and take in the smell that smells like freedom, hang up my jacket, grab a green apron, find Janice slicing, or cleaning, or taking a break to call her kids and make sure they all made it home on the bus, her legs swinging from the metal table, which she's cleaned and then hoisted herself onto because we don't have any chairs in the prep room. Coop used to say that chairs make people lazy. Then, and only then, would I find Nora in her office, smelling of a fresh cigarette, or of perfume if she's trying to quit again. And she would turn her head and smile and say hello and how was your day, and I would smile and say great, because my days used to be great. They used to be as great as walking down a straight road in flip-flops with the sun shining on your face and nothing but blue skies and white puffy clouds overhead. Sometimes, then, Keller would be here too, usually on a break in the dining area with Levi, or maybe just talking to him from across the service counter. He would smell of gasoline, his hands stained black, but Keller would still look at him with dreamy eyes. Even if she had a bruise somewhere, even if she'd hidden it with concealer that would rub off on her Triple S t-shirt, the sleeve or collar. And soon, I would graduate from high school and be finished with my spreadsheet with the money I'd saved and the federal loans and the scholarship I was supposed to get. But everything has changed. I've stopped walking down my road, just like Dana Blakely said. I'm standing still, frozen by decisions that I don't feel equipped to make. Rule 21, knowledge is power, so lack of knowledge is weakness. I open the heavy back door and walk inside. The smell hits me hard, reminding me of what has been lost. Today smells mostly of vinegar, and I see the salad dressing containers open on the counter. Helen's shift ended, and she's left. Tracy won't be in until later. Keller was a no-show, as expected, which leaves Janice and Nora. And, surprisingly, Regina Cooper. They are jammed in the office. It's only big enough for one small desk, the safe underneath it, and a chair for Nora. They don't hear me as I enter the building. I go to the table and find the tops to the salad dressing containers and twist them back on and then put them in the refrigeration unit behind the prep table so they won't spoil. I check the pans, make sure no one's touched them because that's my job and I said I would do it. When I come back out, Janice has left the office. She sees me and hugs me, and today it doesn't feel like anything. I have grown so numb, I realize. Numb and frozen. She's got a bee in her bonnet, Janice tells me. And I ask her who and why, and she says, Regina Cooper, the IRS came back with a warrant. It sounds like trouble. I leave Janice and go to the office, which smells of Regina's expensive perfume. She wears a tailored suit and stockings and leather boots and gold jewelry that clanks on her wrists as she moves her arms about wildly, talking and talking about papers and invoices. The scene overwhelms me, and I wonder if she knows what I know about Coop and Barry and the dirty money. If she does, she's doing a good job of hiding it. Playing the dumb housewife who wears knockoff designer clothing to a sandwich shop. They see me now. Regina's face lights up like help just arrived. Nora seems worried. Charlie! Regina grabs my arm and pulls me inside. I stand with my back against a wall and try not to tap or say the words that run in a loop inside my head about dirty money and lettuce, tomatoes, pickles, onions. Nora sits at her desk. Regina stands behind her chair, looking over her shoulder. Papers are strewn about, statements from the Sawyer Bank and Trust. These were all in a box, in the garage. Bank statements going back 3 years. He only used the bank for the business, the credit card sales and the payments to vendors and the payroll. We have a personal account for our bills and the money goes right from one account to the other. That's it. Very simple, Regina tells me. But we need to see if there's anything wrong. His bookkeeping or whatever. You did some of that, didn't you, Charlie? Coop told me you made some spreadsheets. He always liked you, Charlie. She starts to cry now, but I'm not sure why. He always said how smart you were, how you were going to come back one day and take over this whole town. Liar, I think. Coop would never say that about a girl. I choke on my own breath and start to cough. A violent, dry cough that forces me to step outside and get water from the utility sink. I run the faucet and put my lips to the stream, and then I realize that my eyes face the prep table where Coop lay bleeding from his head. I take one sip of the water and close them right up. They say when something terrible happens, like a natural disaster, or a violent crime, or a horrible accident, or even financial collapse, you first go into shock. You do what's needed to survive, literally survive, in the moment until it's over. That's when the hero comes out, rescuing others, giving away their money, opening their homes to strangers, and everybody feels a little better and then moves on. But for those who survive, after a short time, after the shock wears off, this is exactly what happens. The memories, the emotions, the morality, the humanity, it all comes rushing back in, trying to find a new place to live within a mind that has been decimated by the horrific event. That's what's happening to me. My horror. It happened right here. And now I'll have to find a place for all of those things. They want back in. They want to make sense of the world that's left. Only it's not over, this horror. It's waiting for me in Nora's office. Back inside, Nora explains to Regina that Coop wouldn't let us use those models and spreadsheets. Regina is quick with a reply. Well, this is why, isn't it? The IRS, the government. If there's no paper trail, they can never prove anything, right? Listen to me carefully, Regina says. Her her voice turning sour. The papers from the IRS were all addressed to the company that owns the businesses. She picks up a bank statement, and I read the name on the top. CC Enterprises, LLC.
That's probably good, right? They're not investigating us, just the businesses?
She asks me and Nora, and I think about how absurd this is. I think that I am just a 17-year-old girl trying to get to college, and what do I know about these kinds of papers? I make sandwiches. I also think about what my mom would say, and that makes me angry because she never gets out of my head. I think that Regina Cooper was a fool to leave her entire financial future in the hands of a man like Coop, and the future of her precious daughter, who still needs to get through middle school, high school, and college, and who wouldn't know who or what she was if she couldn't walk through town like she owns the world, because to everyone here, this is the world, and the Coopers do own it. Nora says she doesn't know how Coop structured things, so she can't say what will happen if the IRS investigates. She explains that there are no computer records that show the sales and the invoices from the store. But this is a lie. We have the records on our spreadsheets, even if we don't have the papers to back them up. Coop always took those and, apparently, destroyed them. Regina chews on her right thumbnail, and I think that she's going to ruin her expensive manicure.
What if they don't stop until they have everything, except the house, which they can't take because Coop put it in my name and we own it free and clear?
Nora looks at a few of the bank statements. She seems perplexed. Doesn't he have any holdings, investment accounts, trusts for Lillian, life insurance? He must have left something somewhere because these bank accounts don't have any meaningful balances. Regina gets that same look my mom got in the police station. Haughty. She folds her arms and huffs a little.
Coop and I felt safer staying away from all that. The banks are all connected to the government through the FDIC. And the insurance companies. What if they get taken over by the government with everything else? We didn't go near anything the government could ever touch. People can think what they want. But look at Cuba. Look at Venezuela.
Nora makes the unmistakable sound of irritation, the loud throat clear. They write this into scripts to indicate annoyance. That's how effective it is. And it works now, only not on Regina. Nora's husband died defending our government, so she's allowed to be annoyed. How can we help? Nora asks her, because we both know if she wiggles her way out of this mess with the IRS and inherits these businesses, she will be our new boss, and I feel the wave of realization drown us all like a little tsunami. Regina says it would be helpful if we could go through this box to start and see if things match up with the bank accounts and if there's anything the IRS might flag. And then she says something else, almost as an aside, but it's not an aside. It's the real reason she came here, and we both know it, me and Nora.
Oh, and there's this other matter. Coop told me he had some things in storage and that he wrote it down and put it in the safe and also in some code in his business cell phone. And both of those things were stolen the night he was, well, you know.
Now she cries again, and this time I can see that she is either very upset about losing her husband or about losing access to what he'd left for her in storage. Maybe both.
If you find anything that might be useful, please let me know.
We agree. And Regina takes her fancy handbag and leaves us with the box and a million thank yous, which are meaningless because this will take a lot of work with no extra pay. But we're all one big happy family here at the Triple S. Janice checks the front for customers, then returns to the office. We stand in a circle and look at the floor, thinking, knowing, all of us different things, different pieces to this puzzle.
Nora knows that the income on the bank statements won't match what's on the spreadsheets on her thumb drive, and that those spreadsheets are the truth about what we actually buy and sell. I know, or think I know, that Coop has been working for Barry to launder his money through the businesses, and now I also know that the number that was on that phone in the memo app, which is the same number I found in the safe that night, could be the only clue about where Coop's money is hiding. But Janice knows something as well. "This stays between us, okay?" she says. And we both nod and stare at her and hold our breath. She steadies herself squarely on both feet, puts her hands on her hips, inhales, then opens her eyes wide and lets it all out. "Shane told me that Coop doesn't keep records at the tobacco store either. That he does as many sales in cash as he can, pays vendors in cash when he can so they can get to avoid sales taxes, and then he takes the cash from the safe there once a week in a small duffel bag." Nora and I exchange a look because we've both seen that same thing happen here. "And," she says, then pauses and takes another deep breath that seems heavy with fear. "Shane heard from some of Coop's maintenance guys that he collects rent in cash at his apartment buildings, gives the tenants a small discount, even pays the maintenance guys in cash under the table, tells them they're independent contractors so he's not filing any paperwork for them." We all take a moment to think about this and what it means.
"Thank you, Janice," Nora says. "I appreciate you telling us that. We won't say a word."
Janice nods.
"I just wanted you to know, because me and Shane are both pretty shook up about this. Don't get me wrong, Clay Cooper was a nasty man, and God have mercy on him now. But if he's been cooking his books and the government takes the stores away, what will happen to all of us? He employs a lot of people here. This town is hanging by a thread, and this could be the thing that finally does us in. And then what? People like us don't just get up and move. Not with four kids and a condo that's underwater and no credit."
Janice starts to tear up, so Nora stands from her chair and pulls her into a hug. The roles suddenly reversed, the boundaries crossed, maybe even erased for good. And she tells Janice,
"That's not going to happen. I promise."
We hear a customer call out from the service counter. Janice pulls herself together.
"I'll get it. I'm fine. I'll be fine."
It's been hard here with Keller not showing up, and me and Tracy only working after school, and Helen only working lunch. So we let Janice go and make the sandwich for the straggler, and then we both stand there, silent. Thinking. Finally, Nora speaks.
"Where does he take all that cash?" she asks.
Then she looks at me, because the safe was closed and locked the morning after Coop was found dead. But when the police opened it, it was empty. I change the subject. "Why wouldn't he leave the information Regina is looking for with a lawyer or in his home safe?" I ask. "My mom said Dusty has a will and that she doesn't know what it says because he keeps it with a lawyer. She won't know until he dies and the lawyer shows it to her, but it's somewhere safe."
Nora scoffs.
"Coop didn't trust her, that's why.
And he certainly doesn't trust lawyers if he hates the IRS and the banks and the government so much."
Then she shakes her head.
"How can someone so clever be so dumb at the same time? After college, Charlie, you should go out and make millions of dollars in the stock market like those men on all the news shows. Only you'll be a woman, and won't that be something?"
I smile and nod, and then I say, "That night, I'm about to tell her some of what happened, because I feel like I have to now. I have to get it off my chest. And maybe I can tell only some of it and leave out the hard parts," but she stops me.
"No,"
she says. I don't want to know, and you shouldn't tell anyone except the police when you're ready. I don't ask why. I trust Nora, so I take her advice. Nora steps outside to have a cigarette, and while she's gone, I look at the papers in the box, the bank statements and the letters from the IRS. I take pictures with my phone of a few of the statements and an address I see on some of the envelopes, an address for CC Enterprises, an address in Delaware, and the name of the agent who accepts delivery there. I don't say another word about anything when Nora returns.
Goddamn cigarettes, she says. Don't ever start smoking, Charlie. It never leaves you.
I almost tell her it's just the dopamine, the brain chemicals. But that's a longer conversation, and in the end, it doesn't matter because no one has a cure for dopamine. I tell her I need to get home. I start to leave, but she grabs my arm. Wait, she says. I look at her, and I know that she's just now decided something about me, about this situation. Charlie, she says. There's something else. She looks down and lets out a sigh. I'm the one who told the IRS about this. But it was over a year ago. The thing is, they never replied to me. They never mentioned an investigation or sent out any inquiries. Those letters Regina has, they all went to Coop's business address. And now they've gone to see her, not me. Do you understand what I'm saying? I do. I understand. They're wondering if Nora's a part of this and if she was trying to cover herself by coming forward. But why wouldn't they want you to help them if you do all the bookkeeping? Even if they thought you were doing something wrong, they would use you to turn on Coop. Wouldn't they? Nora shakes her head and smiles. You've been watching too much TV. This is the IRS, not the CIA, Charlie. I told you, it's a bureaucracy, a headless beast. They won't be smart like that. They'll muscle their way in and take what they can get and cause trouble for anyone involved. She sighs again, and this one sounds like regret. I should have known better. But don't you worry. I'll be just fine. I manage an innocent smile because I don't know what else to do. I add this to my list of things to fix if I can. I tell her I need to go take care of something and that I'll be back by 5. It's already 1. She says fine and returns a smile, and then I leave. I get on my bike. I have gone back into shock, into survival mode. My mind pushes away the things that want to return, to find a new place to live. Instead, it finds new energy to focus, and I pedal as fast as I can, thinking and thinking and thinking.
Chapter 23. There's no way around the conclusion all this thinking brings me to. I need help. I need it more than my pride, whatever that even means. I need it more than protecting myself from what might happen. I hate that I need it, but that probably means that I'm right. Ian agrees to meet me at his house. He doesn't ask questions on the phone because even on that one the department doesn't know about, that's not owned by Apple and that doesn't have apps that allow Zuck or the Chinese government to listen in, he still worries. I need to use his computer, and I don't feel safe anywhere else. Not even at the library. Not anymore. I hide my bike around the side behind his garbage cans, then wait for him on his front porch. I can't say why I hide my bike, but not myself. But by the time I think about this, Ian pulls up in his police cruiser, and it's too late. Hey, he says. Hey, wanna come in? And I think, No, I don't want to come inside and see where you live, where you hang your jacket, kick off your shoes, watch TV, eat breakfast, take off your clothes, and go to bed. No, no, no. But I say, sure. He opens the door, and there we are. I follow him quickly to the kitchen in the back. I don't want to remember anything about this house. I pray that my exhaustion is causing a deficit in the chemicals needed to store memories. I don't want to remember anything, and I never want to leave as long as he lives in it. Want something? Ian grabs a Coke from the fridge. Sure, same, I tell him. Sugar and caffeine sound pretty good right now. We sit at a small table pushed up against a wall across from the sink and take sips of our Cokes like we did that night in the back of his truck under the hand of God. Exactly the same, but also totally different. And I think that should be a rule, but I don't know how to begin putting it into words, let alone something I could ever use in any other situation. There is just one Ian and just one love I feel for him, and this Coke reminds me of it. And it is just shitty, shitty shitballs. So, he says cautiously, what's going on? I don't cry very much. I know I've been crying a lot in the past 3 days, but usually I only cry when I'm really mad. Today, I'm not mad. I'm not sad, either. Today, I'm scared. The tears start and turn into sobs. He sits with me and I tell him everything. Almost. I tell him about the IRS and Nora and the thumb drive and the shady books. I tell him that I think Coop might have been double-crossing this man named Barry, who might have found out and now thinks I know things, maybe even about his money that Coop might owe him and how he can get it back. And how I have a cell phone and a paper from his safe that might tell me where he's hidden something that Regina needs, only I don't tell him that the thing Regina is looking for is all the cash Coop siphoned from his stores and apartments to avoid taxes and banks and stocks and anything that he didn't trust. That's what I decided while I was thinking on the ride over here. Regina knows about the money. Maybe the same money Coop owed Barry, or maybe money he was hiding from the government, probably both mixed up together. Regina wants the money, and somehow that money is linked to the number on the phone that was also inside the safe. This is a lot to take in, Charlie. Coop being involved with some criminal, the FBI sneaking into your mother's car, asking for your help. Hidden money. I start to rattle off all of the things I need to find out. Coop ran his business under a company called CC Enterprises, and it's based in Delaware, and there's a firm that serves as the agent there, which I think means they collect official documents and stuff, but I don't know. I need to look all this up, and I need a computer because I can't have it on my phone in case my mom or Dusty check, which they do sometimes, and I can't go to the library because, well, I just can't. I take a long gulp of the Coke. My heart is erratic, fast, then slow, skipping beats. So you need to use my computer. Yeah. Okay. You know I'll always help you. We are still friends, Charlie. I study his face to see what's there. Hasn't he been tortured the way I have? Hasn't this year felt like a lifetime? Hasn't it been impossible to think of me as a friend after we felt what we felt and then had it stolen away by reason? Cold, cold, black-hearted reason? These thoughts have made a jailbreak, and now they spin and spin, holding a gun to my head. Scaring me and making me cry. And now I can't tell what I see on Ian's face, which means everything I've thought about us could be wrong. A fantasy I've created,
to explain what happened that night when I told him we couldn't be together, not ever, because it would ruin my life, as if something like that held that much power. Maybe all of my rules just add up to a giant pile of shit. He is real, Ian says. I look up now with a question mark on my wet, sobbing face. Agent Max Zalman. You asked me to check, and I did. He is an agent with the Bureau. That's something. And now he has to know I'm not making all of this up. Maybe I'm not crazy. When do you need to get back? He asks me. I tell him 5 o'clock, in time for the dinner prep at the Triple S. Give me what you want me to research. I'll see what I can find out. He hands me a notepad and a pen from the kitchen counter, and I write down the name of the company and the law firm in Delaware. Can you take a deep breath now? He asks. Anyone else would not be this calm, this patient. My mom would be calling doctors. Keller would be handing me a beer and a cigarette. Janice would hug me until I was snapped in two like a little twig. Nora, well, maybe Nora. But then what would she think afterward? Would she still trust me with the inventory and the spreadsheets? Would she still let me work there? Somehow Ian knows I'll be okay, even though he's never seen me quite like this. Come on, he says. I don't ask questions. I get up when he reaches for my hand, and I follow him into his bedroom.
It's not what you think. If you were thinking anything, you just need to sleep, even for an hour.
He pulls back the comforter and waits for me to get beneath it. Then he tucks it around me and under the mattress so it's tight. There's a heavy blanket in his closet, which he also gets and wraps around me. And I think about my mom and how she used to do this with her babies. Swaddling, she called it. And I think that's how I feel right now. Like a baby that needs to be swaddled. And it's humiliating, but also something else. Human, maybe. I feel human.
Sleep.
He leaves me with this command as he walks out, closing the door. Suddenly, everything stops. Sound. Motion. Heart. I close my eyes and breathe in the smells of him on his pillow. I hate that I remember what he smells like, up close like this, but only for a second because there's no room for that now. His bed warms quickly as my body sinks into the folds. And before I can have another thought, I forget that I can't love him anymore, and that maybe he doesn't love me anymore, and I drift into the darkness of my unconscious mind. Chapter 24. Rule number 2. Once you love someone, it's hard to stop. This is why, according to the scientists on Google, and once again, it's just brain chemicals wreaking havoc. High levels of dopamine are released during attraction. These chemicals make us giddy, energetic, and euphoric. Dopamine is the primary drug responsible for addiction. Love, cigarettes, shooting guns at tin cans, boxes in the attic. It's just the stupid brain with its stupid chemicals. It's rule number 4 again. All feelings are the result of chemical reactions in the brain. I think about this as I walk from Ian's bedroom to his kitchen, the smell of him still lingering on my body after sleeping in his bed. It's been over a year, as he reminded me nearly 2 hours ago, and the triggers that link Ian with happiness are still there. Nothing has replaced them. I can feel the chemicals surging, and they tell my brain I have to have him. They're still there, and I think they always will be.
What has made life tolerable are the new pathways I've built around them. New things that make me happy, like a beer with Keller and making sandwiches and counting my money and even dreaming of college. But they are like specks of dust that blow away now as I remember his hands on my skin and his mouth on my mouth and his whisper in my ear saying those words, I love you. My mom has said a lot of things about love. But I know other things about love, things I've learned from other people. Like Janice, who says that the time she spent with Shane before they had kids, the time when they were really in love, cement that then dried slowly over time. And now they are bound together by that cement, which is like one giant block of love that you get to lean on forever. And Nora, who never got to be out of love. She never got to the baby part and the cement part, but she still has the memory part, and that makes her happy. And Keller, she's in the heart of the love part right now. The red hot heart that would make someone want to kill for you and would make you want to kill for them. My mom lives without love or even the hope of finding love because she's married to Dusty. And I think that's worse than having a shitty duct-taped life. Sometimes I wonder how she gets up in the morning. But then again, I don't know how I'll get up tomorrow after having these specks of dust blown away, the pathways unearthed, the smell of this man, the feel of his bed, the images of his house and his face fresh in my memories. The sleep has helped. I know because my mind has made room for these feelings and the thoughts that follow, the ordering of the people in my life into their right places. I needed this. It also has room for the things that Ian found while I slept in his bed. He found out about Coop's company, CC Enterprises, and the address in Delaware, which is where the company was formed because it has better tax laws. It was formed by a law firm in Wilmington named Huff and Adler, and his lawyer's name is on the website, Daryl Romansky. What does that mean? I ask him, hovering over his shoulder as he sits at the table with his laptop. I don't know, he says. Probably nothing. Coop didn't trust banks. That's pretty common around here, you know. My mom keeps her savings in a safety deposit box, which is at the bank, but she says it's different because it's real, something she could go and see with her eyes and touch with her hands, and not just some numbers on a piece of paper. And what about you? I ask, worried again about my savings for college. Ian shrugs. I get my paycheck. I put it into my bank account. I file my tax return like everyone else. I don't really have time to try to hide things. Not everyone else. Not Coop. He didn't pay all his taxes because the IRS is after him. And now so is this man Barry who gave him money to clean. And I guess he didn't give it back the way he was supposed to. Charlie, Ian says now, I have to be honest. This story... Things like this don't happen around here. Lots of things happen around here, I tell him. You'd be surprised. Chapter 25. Things are strange when I get back to Dusty's house. It's dead quiet, and there is no smell of dinner, not even chicken nuggets. I already know Dusty isn't home because my mom's car is the only one in the garage. I rack my bike where I'm supposed to because I don't need any more trouble today. I skipped school and told my lawyer more than I wanted to or meant to, but she got to me with her story about growing up around here and knowing men like Coop. I copied information from Regina Cooper's box of documents, told Ian about it, slept in his bed, and felt things I didn't want to feel, made 41 sandwiches, restocked the pans for the morning, and now here I am, back home where there is no sign of Dusty or the boys. "Where is everyone?" I ask my mom. She's in the kitchen, sitting at the counter, drinking wine. She's been drinking and thinking, and that's not a good combination for her.
"Gone," she says without looking up. "Dusty took the boys to the kids' cabin for 2 days.
The kids' cabin is a giant hotel complex for families. Everyone goes there during the long winter months. It has an indoor water park and a magic game that has kids roaming the halls on every floor with wands and guidebooks searching for clues. If you ask me, it's like a playground for pedophiles. Unsupervised children right outside hotel rooms in their pajamas sometimes with their wands, desperate to find magic fairies and elves. "What about school?" I ask. It's still Monday, which seems impossible. This day has gone on forever. She takes a long drink from her glass, and I watch as her face softens.
"He's punishing me,"
she says. "What for?" I am genuinely confused. My mom hasn't done anything. I'm the one who's caused the trouble. Then she ties it all together, and I feel stupid for not doing it myself because it's so obvious.
"For you, Charlie. He's punishing me for you. I know you have your reasons, but it's embarrassing that you won't talk to the police. I'm not saying you should, but that's why Dusty's upset."
I have no reason to be stunned. My mom has hurled things like this at me before, right at my heart. Like when I started running to keep my body from changing, and when I wore ACE bandages around my breasts so she wouldn't try to feel them again and a million other times. It seems impossible, and yet I feel wounded, as though I didn't know this about my mom, that she loves me, but also resents me for the trouble I cause her. It seems to be a lesson I have to keep learning over and over and over. She waits for an answer, but I don't have one. But then, suddenly, I do. "Well, I didn't ask to be born, did I?" I stand across from her and tap my fingers and feel my heart pound. I've never confronted my mom before. I can feel her eyes on me, but I can't meet them. "That's ridiculous." "No, it's not. And I have other things to say now, but I've already put myself in such a state of agitation that my fingers begin to move and I can't stop them. 3 taps each. Left hand, right hand, both hands. Left hand, right hand, both hands. I force my mouth open. "Mr. Nelson," is all I say. I don't use more words because those words say everything. And why make this harder than it already is?
"What did you say?"
I hear something in her voice I haven't heard before. Shock? Surprise? She normally doesn't let these emotions slip past the gate. "English. 10th grade," I say. She pulls herself together now.
"I know who he is. Why are you saying his name to me?"
I stop tapping because I need my hands to brace myself against the counter. I feel dizzy, like if I drank one of Keller's beers too fast and then smoked her cigarette right at the same time. A major head rush, which doesn't feel good. I sit and drop my head into my palms, elbows resting on the marble.
"Take a deep breath," my mom says. "Just breathe, Charlie."
I breathe, and suddenly I'm 9 years old, watching my shows in our shitty apartment with the duct tape. She relaxes when my breathing slows. She drinks more wine, and more, and more, each time setting the glass down with a loud clanking sound.
"Does it matter?" she asks me, student, teacher, whatever. It was a man. I let him get to me. All the things I've told you, they're all true. You know they are. I'm not stupid, Charlie. I know about the billboard off the interstate, and I know about Ian. But Mr. Nelson was old. He could have taken care of us, I say. Because now I think it doesn't matter if she gave in to the stirring and had a baby, because Mr. Nelson wasn't a kid whose parents could move him away. She laughs, but not because she finds this funny. It's a sarcastic laugh. He could have, but he didn't want to. More laughter comes, and it's louder until it turns to a few tears and then stops, dead. In fact, she says, he didn't want to so badly that he left town the second we were found out. I was 16, and he was 26, and that makes what he did illegal. But you see, that's the difference. He got to choose, and I didn't. My choice was made when I gave into it, when I let him get to me. I have so many questions now. Like, why didn't we just stay in our shitty apartment until I got older and she could be free again? And why, even now, doesn't she do the thing she tells me to do while the boys are at school? She could take classes at the community college. She could take them online. She could get herself ready for when the boys are grown and she will still have time. I want to know why she gave up, but I don't ask. When I can feel her eyes leave me, I look at her quickly, then away. And I don't know what to make of her. What I see on her face and what I feel radiate off her skin. It provokes the memory from that night we ran from her parents' house when I was just 5. And I wonder if all of her dreams died for good when her mother called her a whore and then put our things out on the curb for the garbage collector, even my baby clothes and the bed I first slept in. Like we were both dead to her. Maybe that's what put the final bullet in her dreams. Where is he now? I ask. I'm suddenly curious if he suffered as well, having to quit his job and move away. She shrugs. I don't know. I don't want to know. He never tried to come back for us. There's a strange pause that feels like a page being turned over from front to back, and her tone changes from resignation to curiosity. Do you want to know? Is that what this is about? She asks me. And now I have to turn the page as well. I have never had this thought. Not before, when I thought my father was a selfish jock. And not today, when I found that picture of Mr. Nelson in the yearbook. No, I tell her, because that is the truth.